Hi, everyone, and welcome to the special Meet the Board series featured once a month on Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast. Each week on Wednesdays, Managed Healthcare Executive features C-Suite healthcare professionals whom we speak with about the most important issues in healthcare. In our Meet the Board series, we spotlight a member of MHE's editorial advisory board so our listeners know more about our board members and their roles in healthcare. The Meet the Board series is broadcasted at the end of every month. So be sure when you tune in to listen in and learn a lot.
Well, hello, everybody. My name is Peter Werwein, and I am Senior Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive.
Hi, I'm Brianna Contreras, and I'm Associate Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. Today, we have the pleasure of speaking with Rodrigo Cerda. He's the Vice President of Clinical Care Transformation at Independence Blue Cross in Philadelphia. He's joining us today for our Tuning Into the C-Suite Meet the Board podcast series. So thank you, Rodrigo, for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. Real pleasure.
No problem. So first, we kind of wanted to get started with this podcast. We wanted to know a bit more about yourself for our listeners and for ourselves, kind of how you got to this position you're at today. And yeah.
So I'm an internal medicine doc by background. I think I first got into the healthcare field, thinking about health policy and public health and global health. I worked at the World Health Organization while I was in college, and I saw that a lot of the people who were leaders globally tended to be physicians, and I liked the idea. I felt like, you know, being a doc could help me have this kind of tangible impact every day. But I always kind of had both of those things. And after residency at Mass General Hospital in Internal Medicine, I sort of had a fork in the road of going the health policy route, health policy research. And I was doing some work with model-based analysis, so looking at like cost effectiveness and how do we increase delivery, had an opportunity to go out there do consulting work with McKinsey, and kind of felt like it was an opportunity to get my hands dirty and see what are the big problems that leaders are working on in healthcare. So I kind of swung in that direction, and had an opportunity to work with payers and providers and governments. I worked in the U.S. I was based in Boston for 3 years, and then I moved to the U.K. And I was based in London for 3 years, which was, you know, really interesting in that, you know, exposed me to a whole different way of thinking about really common problems, actually. You know, they're still trying to figure out how we deliver the best quality care under scarce resources, albeit a bit more scarce than here. So then, you know, we were already looking to come back to the U.S. and the opportunity came up to join Independence, and it was great. It's like coming home. I went to I did my medical school here in Philadelphia at Penn, and so I really love the city, and I felt like it was a homecoming. You know, really, this is part of Independence's broader commitment to be a positive force in transforming clinical care in across its network, right? So how do we figure out how to improve the value of healthcare, quality, experience, and cost? Right, and our team is really focused on how do we better align incentives with providers so that we're paying for the outcomes we want, in addition to the productivity, which is the traditional incentive around fee-for-service. How do we really collaborate hand in hand with our provider network to deliver that high-quality experience and lower costs? So we do, how do we share data with them? We have joint value committees with health systems and we have population health specialists that work hand in hand with primary care docs. We do case and condition management as well. And then the third kind of pillar of this is a clinical care innovation pipeline. The idea being that, you know, we kind of have this idea of where we want to get to in a higher value care, but doing that requires trying a lot of new things and doing that in partnership with our provider network. So the innovation pipeline is really meant to kind of create that engine of innovation that allows us to try something in a kind of smaller pilot, to do it in a short cycle time, so that, you know, we've defined the whole business case ahead of time, we've got some leading things, and we can continue to optimize how we do it. And so that's, you know, that those are the kind of three main areas that we focus on. And I feel like I get the candy, right? I get the stuff that I think is exciting. So I'm really, I feel like I lucked out here in this job.
So just a couple of questions. You say that you're working in the innovation pipeline and you have all these bowls of candy in front of you. Could you just tell us about maybe one or two of the projects in the pipeline that, you know, you're most excited about, and maybe where you have some data that they're accomplishing this transformation in clinical care that's part of your title and part of your mission?
Yeah. Well, I can tell you about two types of examples. There's two types of ways that we fund these kind of new initiatives. One is for things that are truly new and that need development, we actually have a grant program. This year is the first year that we've done a kind of open grant application and gave out $1 million worth of grants for new things and across five grants. Those are going to be announced shortly, but I could tell you one that we've done in a prior year. And then the other aspect of it is where there's a good initiative. There's proof that it works in other settings, but we don't pay for it and our providers don't do it. And so we need to figure out how to do both of those things. And I can give you an example of that. So an example of a grant, we've been working closely together with Penn Medicine and their Innovation Center. I think that we had three grants last year. They ranged from an initiative that helped to have a better transition from the emergency room to home. So gets them, you know, has that evaluation in the emergency room, sets them up with all the services they're going to need and technology enablement, so that rather than getting admitted, you can divert some of those people to home. There's a few others where Breathe Better Together, one that was focused on COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, people who come in and out of the hospital all the time and have problems that you could theoretically catch earlier. And so it's a way of really monitoring their symptoms and their needs, so that, you know, rather than, you know, waiting until the time when they're definitely going to have to be admitted, it's really proactively taking care of them. And it uses a pretty innovative text-based platform. So it's kind of high tech, low tech. And it's an interesting, both of those are in progress now. So we don't have results on those yet. There's another example that, you know, so those are the couple of grant examples. On the kind of pipeline example, you know, we have been working with a local cardiology group on doing telemonitoring for heart failure. You know, these people with heart failure, you know, have chronic problems. They sometimes have issues with managing how much fluid builds up in their bodies. And, you know, if they, whatever happens, something bad happens with their heart, or they eat too much salt, they can have fluid buildup, and, you know, then they have trouble breathing and even sometimes trouble absorbing meds. And so a lot of times they end up having to come into the hospital and spend 5 days trying to get them back to normal. And so the idea there is to have better telemonitoring, scale, pulse oximeter, see how their oxygen levels are, blood pressure cuff and have that cardiology group on top of these patients that are always coming in and out of the hospital. And the hypothesis there is that they can keep them out of the hospital as well. So that one is also in development and enrolling now. So a lot of these things are all kind of hot off the presses. And maybe if you talk to us this time next year, we'll have great results to share.
So at least two out of the three of those involve some use of, broadly speaking, telehealth, but remote patient monitoring. And of course, we're hearing so much about telehealth and remote monitoring. I know you want to see what the results are, but do you see this as sort of path forward on clinical transformation, that it's going to be the virtual experience that actually starts to transform care and make it improve its quality and drive down its cost? I mean, you work for a payer after all, so we have to talk about cost.
Well, we represent our members and that and everybody, right? It's we the costs of healthcare are too high overall, so we can't go around that. Yeah, I think that's right. You know, virtual care or a variety of terms that come under it, I think it's a really big opportunity now. It's been something that's been building for a long time, but I think now we've got a lot of new technology in place in terms of, interoperability between different systems, ability to use analytics for targeting, artificial intelligence for chatbots. There's a lot of new technology in place broadly. The coronavirus pandemic has meant that a lot of people have been exposed to using, digital tools to access healthcare, both providers and members. And what we found is that once they start using it, they like it, and they're much more likely to use it in the future. So we think that this is definitely a part of the future, and we want to take this opportunity to not only add a site of care that people tended not to use too much before the pandemic, but also to use it as a way of really helping people get the right care, right place, right time, navigate a really complex health system people just have trouble accessing. And so half the time, that's part of what makes them end up in the hospital.
So who's going to pay? Some of this is fairly capital intensive, not hugely, so not like building a building, say, but who's going to pay for the investment to create all this virtual care and the technology needed? And, I'm just wondering whether you've thought about that, about the financial responsibility here, or is this something that would be shared? Is there a role for independents or any payers, just if this is going to be the enzyme of clinical care transformation?
It's great that you use that term. And sorry, I lost you a bit in the middle, but the idea of being the enzyme, I think, is something we've talked about broadly for clinical care transformation and our clinical care innovation pipeline. It's the idea that we know that, we can have better care, better experience, better quality, and lower cost if we make this investment up front. But this investment up front keeps us from getting to that other promised land. And I think we do have a role to play in all of that. We've just been, going through a strategy cycle. And one of the things that is a big part of that is how to really be a part of the virtual care solution. So we, during the pandemic, have expanded where the types of things that we pay for through telemedicine and have kept things at close to parity to in-person. And we know that we're not going to go back to where we were before. So coverage is going to be a big part of how we contribute to that investment. And the other bit is to make those investments ourselves, right? So we're thinking about how do we use our own member portal to help people navigate? How do we connect to some of the provider infrastructure that they have, right? So if you have a problem, you come to us, we point you to that right side of care. The ideal would be, not only do we point you to the phone number, but you know, it's ideally a single sign-on, or we can give you a link to schedule directly, right? And then I think that's where it starts to get really interesting. People might say that that seems far off and it requires a lot of collaboration between payers and providers and technology companies. I would say we are our best place to make that happen. A case in point is that we've been in discussions with some providers in the city of Philadelphia of, can we help our members to schedule vaccinations, for example. That's been something that is very tricky. It's very hard if you have any relatives or yourself are in those priority groups for vaccines. It's very hard. There's lots of different systems. And it's an opportunity for us to try to kind of collaborate on that. So it's not that far off, and I think it'll be really valuable if we can pull it off.
Are you in the business now or getting ready in the business of arranging, through the independence portal, members being able to sign up for vaccinations through independence? And I just have to say, I'm in Philadelphia, and we're aware, a lot of the country is aware that Philadelphia had a major fiasco on its hands in terms of COVID-19 vaccination with a group that the city contracted with that turned out to be not a above board organization. So but that's a digression. Is Independence beginning to think about opening up its portal so members could sign up to get vaccinated through Independence?
I don't know that it would be us necessarily opening up our portal to schedule directly, but I think it's more about facilitating the connections to our provider network. We are a part of this region, and we certainly have members across the country, but I think in this region, we particularly have a big presence, and we very much see ourselves as a part of the community. So we're having these conversations on how can we be a part of the solution, right? And, it's a complex system, many moving parts, and the vaccines are the vaccine supply is controlled by the city, but we are looking at how can we facilitate scheduling with providers, and is there an opportunity for us to provide even more sites for vaccination? So those are all things that are in development, I wouldn't jump the gun on announcing anything there, but we're looking at these things because we very much want to be a part of the solution.
So, Rodrigo, I actually wanted to know, what were your thoughts on healthcare disparities, maybe along the lines of, racial disparities or those patients who are falling under social determinants of health? Maybe just your thoughts on some of those topics, for example. Yeah.
This is another one of our important priorities as we look at the next few years of better measuring and addressing disparities in healthcare access and outcomes. We've been doing some of this work on measurement, and we find evidence really across the board of differential in access. In particular, here in Philadelphia, by neighborhood, there are big disparities in terms of socioeconomic status in different areas, and we have in this city a differential of life expectancy between our richest neighborhood and our poorest neighborhood of something like 30 years. So like 55 to 85, something like that. I'd have to check the data. So disparities are very significant. We also have seen evidence even among our own members of differences in access to care, like behavioral health care, where our Black members are much less likely to access behavioral health. Even differences in whether if they come into an emergency room, whether they're admitted or not. So we're looking at these things. We're at the point of having conversations with our network providers of understanding, trying to get underneath it to the root causes. And the next step is really trying to see what can we do about this? And we're very committed to addressing inequities in healthcare.
So do you have any preliminary thoughts on pilots that you might do to close some of these disparities or have any of the grant applicants sort of been in this realm of social determinants of health and closing disparity?
Yeah, certainly a lot have. There are several, and some are about to be announced soon. So I'm just trying to think which ones. I think that there's one, for example, where we have a big initiative around chronic kidney disease here. It started this year, and we've done that in partnership with Strive and our network providers.
What is Strive?
Strive is a startup, is a newish company that is really focused on providing that wraparound care for people with advanced chronic kidney disease. And that is an area, for example, that has also significant disparities in care, right? The poorer you are, the more likely you are to have chronic kidney disease and be on dialysis, which is renal replacement therapy. And also, if you are of a minority population, you're also more likely to have that and to have worse outcomes. So that equity in that, is very much a target, right? And how do we help members who, perhaps the reason that they didn't make it to their dialysis was a problem of transport or, they had to prioritize something else, work or something, or they couldn't take their medications because they had to prioritize food, right? And so it's just an example of how health equity and social determinants really pervades and should pervade everything that we do.
Yeah, I think that particularly in the Medicare Advantage program, they are now allowing payers to start to cover meals and transportation. The uptake of some of those services has been a little slow, at least in some programs, but I think more and more, at least in the context of Medicare Advantage, you see payers beginning to realize that covering transportation costs, providing meals, even something like pest control is a good investment because it lowers, it results in people having better health, which is by and large less costly than poor health fundamentally.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of examples, and we did some work with our children's hospital here. Kids with asthma and having interventions in their homes to kind of reduce things that might exacerbate their asthma, sources of dust and things that might kind of exacerbate their allergies. It seems simple, but we are willing to spend thousands and thousands of dollars each time that child ends up in the emergency room and in the hospital, but why shouldn't we be willing to invest in something that would keep that child healthy outside and playing instead?
So I've had this discussion, about social determinants of health with many people now over the last couple of years. And I've just wondered whether sometimes people in healthcare who understand social determinants of health, but maybe whether there's some nagging doubt about the healthcare system going there out into the world and trying to transform society to address all these disparities, whether healthcare is a big enough lever to move what are such, deep-seated large problems. Do you ever wonder whether you're taking on too much?
It's an excellent question, right? Where should we draw the boundaries between what a payer does, what a provider does, what government should do, what charities should do? And I think part of the answer, and hopefully it's not a cop-out, is that everybody should, you know, all of those entities, right? We can't do it alone, but I think neither can providers alone and neither can charities. So I think it's just trying to really be a part of the solution, trying to, you know, some of the things that we're doing around social determinants of health, in particular in our Medicare population, as you mentioned, is just helping people navigate. So if you have issues with housing security, food insecurity, or transportation, pointing people towards resources that exist to help address those problems. And sometimes that's part of the solution, right? We can't provide housing for everyone. I wish we could, but I think at least in some of those things, we can help get people connected to the right resources that can assist them.
Pointing the way.
Pointing the way is a part of it. There are some cases when, there are some cases where it's worth just paying for that transportation because it's really that important that they come in to the doctor's office or whatever it might be. And so we look at how we might do that and how we can justify it. The thing about healthcare is that healthcare is so expensive that sometimes, you know, you can make business cases, right? If you just keep somebody out of the hospital for a day or two or out of the emergency room, you know, you've got thousands of dollars to play with. So you can make a case for public health like interventions a bit easier, I guess.
I guess there's a certain irony there that public health case benefits from the extraordinary investment we've put into acute care. So that. Yeah.
No, it's true. I think in the U.S. we are very we're very wedded to the rescue principle, right? We tend to and this is broader issue of access to care, right? We tend to skimp on the prevention. We tend to skimp sometimes on the universal coverage. But if somebody's in an emergency room, we'll always pay for that. We don't, right? People who are insured end up subsidizing those that aren't. I think that's changing, and I have hope for that, but that's where we need to go.
Okay, well, we did want to ask, in these interviews, we do more of like a personal closing question. So first, if you could just share maybe some of your personal or professional goals that you do have for this year. If you'd want to share that.
maybe the personal ones.
Yeah.
Personal goals for this year, man. I hope we can all get vaccinated. I think that's a big goal because I think we're like a lot of people are tired of working out of our homes and not seeing anybody. So I would love in summer to maybe be able to have some kind of travel and see friends and family that I haven't seen. It's been a long time, and I was just reminding my wife earlier today. We've been at this pandemic for a year, and it's February, which is already winter. You know, we just have to hopefully get through, and I'm hoping that things start to look brighter soon.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.